This episode is brought to you in partnership with Wacom. Across the globe, learning is still handwriting-centric, especially in mathematics and science. This can make the shift to digital tasks challenging. Many schools are seeking effective apps and hardware to ensure a smoother transition for digital learning, especially for STEM lessons.
Expanding digital pen and ink technology from teachers to students opens up new possibilities for communication and collaboration in and out of the classroom. Using pen-enabled devices, teachers and students can explain complex concepts, take notes, provide feedback, and show their work quickly and easily.
Wacom pen displays and tablets easily plug in to the existing IT equipment in the classroom, enabling members of the class to interact with the digital content being shared. The teacher never even needs to turn their back on the class. Collaboration is simple when working on shared documents and apps with the digital pen. There's no new software to learn. You just work with the pen on the screen or tablet instead of the mouse and keyboard on your computer.
As educators, myself, Steve and Ben have all integrated the use of Wacom technology into where we've worked in education, into colleges and schools, and we have seen the benefits for ourselves. So go check it out for yourself. The link is in the show notes for this episode.
One, two.
Dan, good evening. Welcome to episode Edge Your Futurist, episode 194. Good evening, buddy. It's just me and thee tonight. It's like the original Dream Team. No Steve. How are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, not doing too badly. I think my signal's just dropped. Can you hear me all right?
Can hear you all right. I think you're just having a little bit of a slow-mo motion on the old video.
hopefully it'll kick back in a second. Doing really well. Fantastic week. Went away for the weekend with the family at a nice farmhouse.
Not in Berwick?
No, we went down to the Durham Dales, which is nice. Yeah, nice time away and some wet country walks. But yeah, lovely. Yeah. How about yourself?
Yeah, we've had a good week. It's half term here in the UK for most people, not everybody, but for a lot of people. So my two girls have been off school, and actually my wife took a week off as well because we were thinking maybe to go away, but we didn't in the end. But we did had a really nice day on Tuesday. We went to the Imperial War Museum in Manchester. So have you been there, Dan?
No, to be honest, because like as you know, I used to live in Greater Manchester. But when you mentioned it before, I've never even knew it was there. Never heard of it.
Yeah, it's right next to Salford Quays and Media City. So we went over and had a look at a bit of Media City stuff as well, and had lunch over there. But yeah, we're in the Imperial War Museum, and my girls are a little bit older than yours, aren't they? So I don't think it'd be suitable for your little ones at the moment yet. But mine are fascinated by history. And have been for quite a while. And obviously the time of year, this is veteran season as well. So as we get ready for Armistice Day in early November. So what was really good, we can talk about it if you're interested, Dan, but maybe our listeners won't be interested, but certainly what was really nice was that there were veterans there from all the major armed forces. So my girls got to speak to an ex-army, an army veteran who taught, and they had a play with some of their kit and that kind of stuff. And then they had a couple of ex-naval officers who taught them Morse code, which they absolutely loved. But I suppose the pinnacle of the three conversation was an RAF veteran who my eldest wants to go in the RAF, and she's got this idea about doing flying and being a pilot and whatever else. She's 12. She got to speak to him, so that was pretty cool. So there were veterans there, but also what I'm fascinated by history as well. Just that whole conversation around that. But they have the immersive experience, and I don't know if I talked to you about this before, Dan, but they have an immersive experience on the hour, every hour, which is pretty cool.
Nice. So What's the immersive experience?
Like we set that up there, perfect, Dan. So basically, they have a huge they have an exhibition that goes all the way around, and they've got exhibits even in the middle of the museum. But then they've got a huge projection set up. So on the main exhibition space, the walls become video walls. So they've got projectors in there. And then they have sounds, and they have like videos, interviews of like children at war or women at war, or like they have like a video that happens at every hour on the hour. And it was great because it felt like some of it, some of the noise, some of the look and feel, the visual stuff just kind of made. My girls were talking about, I wonder what it must have been like, how loud it must have been when bombs were landing in Manchester, and all the conversations around what it meant to be a child at war, and what it still means to be a child at war, for those people that are still suffering with conflict around the world. So yeah, it was pretty epic. And it was what I really liked is it then almost this digital element led, this digital immersion stuff became really powerful for analog conversations with my girls, because then when they wanted to talk about rations, and they wanted to talk about all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was pretty cool. It was a good day.
Nice. So, yeah, it sounds cool. It reminds me, as you were talking, it reminded me of there's a Holocaust museum in Jerusalem called Yad Vashem, and there's like a room you go into, and they read out. There's like a recording. They're reading out the names of everyone who died. Takes so long to get through it, but I think there's like projections of candles on the walls, and yeah, it's a very like immersive space. It's quite powerful.
Yeah, and the same thing happened like in terms of that emotional stuff. You start thinking, wow, you forget it sometimes. I think I was talking to my wife on the way out, and we were talking about the World War. So my eldest has gone to secondary school, and we said to her, have you done anything about World War II yet? And she went, oh, no, not yet. We're looking at the Stone Age or whatever it is. I don't know what they're looking at. I might have got that wrong. But she then said, I think it's when we get into year nine. And my wife says, I don't think it will just be year nine. You do World War II every year in secondary school. And it's just like almost as if it's a given. It's a topic that we have to study. And what was quite nice is that we were thinking about real people and their experience. And that was great for the kids. And it ties in probably to some of the stuff that we've talked about before, about empathy and that wider conversation about character development, that understanding that this is reality for some people even now. It's not just our grandparents. And we're talking to my grandma today, and she lived through some of that. She was evacuated from Manchester. So it was quite a nice then follow-on conversation with my girls to be able to use that. And it was using that technology with that immersive experience, allowed them to experience some like war footage and whatever else that sits with that. Then has made that whole, it's almost like extended or made that that learning experience better for the kids. So yeah, and always the teacher taking them to a museum in the half term, but the kids loved it. So, yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. It's interesting that, because at work, as part of my work at the moment, there's a few people on my team who are developing an immersive learning framework. Right. I'm not sure if I mentioned the podcast before, but where I work, we've invested heavily in immersive 360 rooms for learning.
Yeah.
Quite really impressive, really. We've got the first one we had and still have is like a full 360 cylindrical room, with wall projection, floor projection. You really, especially with the added floor projection, really able to immerse somebody in a virtual environment within there. And I suppose it's like if you think of like virtual reality without a headset, and then what it means is you can have multiple people in there. And kind of like a bit of a mixed reality, because like, for example, some of our medical health students will bring in like a sim man. So like one of those dolls where you can do CPR on and things like that. Yeah. But be within the context of a hospital because they're in the immersive room, so they can, and as part of the framework, we're really looking, and we, like, I sat around a table with a few of my team the other day for about 3 hours, and we were really thrashing out what the different types of learning experiences from immersive technology, going from the very basic using immersive technology just to set a scene, really. And I say basic because it doesn't involve much in terms of the setting up and the technology, but can also be so powerful. Just to put somebody in a completely different context that or a different setting that they've never been in before, all the way through to complete interactivity. So you can technology now where you can touch the walls and completely interact with it and embed in assessment and feedback from a learning point of view into that type of environment as well, and kind of looking at how immersive can transform learning from the basic, just changing the environment, to complete pedagogical integration, really. Full transformation, really, because we're kind of using the SAMR model of digital integration to underpin it to a certain extent. So yeah, it's interesting, and it really fascinates me, that whole area of how this type of technology is transforming learning and will continue to, but also, and I suppose it's probably what impacts learning, is how it's transforming industry as well at the moment. Yeah. It's not going away. Now, we've talked about the metaverse a few times, haven't we, on this podcast? And the metaverse is very much interlinked with virtual reality. Virtual reality is kind of the technology to access the metaverse, I guess. It's...
Do you know what's really interesting here is that I think this is it ties into the stuff that I was talking about in terms of the War Museum, but and the stuff that you're doing there. It's that you remember those things that were experiential, and obviously we've talked about like this experiential or phenomenological model of learning, and there's something quite powerful about it. I remember very little from my university study, which doesn't seem that long ago, if I'm honest. I went to university in 2004. So yeah, it is quite a long time ago. I'm aware of that. It's 18 years ago when I started university. And I remember, I think probably two or three lectures from being there. And one of them, I wouldn't necessarily say that that's not fair. I was going to say, I don't know if I learned very much from it. I think I probably did. And it was about Amnesty International, actually. So the lecturer was talking about Amnesty International, and we walked into the lecture room, or it was like a seminar room. It was a smaller room, and there were no tables and chairs in it. There was just, we had to go and sit on the floor. There was a candle in the middle with some barbed wire, obviously from the Amnesty International conversation. Then there was some rope, and then there were some like scenarios. And then we had to start thinking about people who were in certain difficult situations that Amnesty International were supporting. Difficult situations is probably a bit of an understatement, but it was that whole felt like you were immersed in it, and you felt like you were part of it, and you were having to, rather than just being told about Amnesty International, it was almost like like experiential learning opportunity. And I think about some of the other examples of when I've been teaching, of where we've done something that's been a little bit out of the box, where you do things like that, or when we've done I remember we did as an RE teacher, we did a Hindu mandir, and we put some incense in that space. We put food in there for the langar, for the food afterwards. Like the whole, like the children had to take their shoes off as they walked in. There was just some really nice immersive experiences where you remember that. Now, what we're talking about here is that ability to use technology to take that and enhance that to a new level, isn't it? It's not saying that stuff happened 18 years ago with no technology. We're talking about now there's technology that can take that to a whole nother level in terms of immersion and experience.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the advantages of it are vast in terms of what you can recreate in there. So you see a lot of industries now, some big industries, looking at like how healthcare, like I mentioned before, public safety, tourism, gas and oil companies. There's a company near where I am, just a warehousing company for Nissan, and they they're all using these immersive technologies to show and to practice and to learn skills that yeah. then are applied in real life. Or and I was aware, as I was, I think I was talking about this to someone yesterday, and I was using that language of, well, you can learn skills in virtual reality that you can then use back in real life, but actually you can learn skills in virtual reality that can stay in there and can still become your living. If you're a 3D artist or a virtual reality artist, or a 3D architect, so people who create virtual worlds, a bit like gaming design, the amount of careers that can go on within the metaverse or a virtual reality environment now. And I suppose it's what it's a blank canvas, isn't it? I really think places like educational providers are going to have to start bringing on board like what would traditionally be called like gaming designers, people who can create these types of these virtual reality assets and worlds where students can learn and be immersed in different environments.
And but it is super niche as it stands, isn't it? And that's the reality of it, is that we know, and I wrote something recently, and I know that we've had this conversation before, Dan, about how prohibitive some of this technology might be. But then again, and I think we have to acknowledge that, and we have to say that that's the case, that although we know that these immersive igloos and the whole process around virtual reality headsets and all that are prohibitive to not just to young people in our country, but globally as well. But that was the case in almost all of the technology that has now become ubiquitous. So like mobile phones were prohibitive, like certain people didn't have them. And I know that now the numbers are through the roof in terms of the amount of people that have got smartphones. And so absolutely, if this is the technology that's useful and the cost will drive down based on demand and based on the ability to create it. But I think what's interesting to tie into this is that you talked about that ability to develop skills and why it's important to do that. That almost practicing of doing this stuff is a valuable learning experience. I know that I talked about this, a few years ago when I was at a college in the Northwest, and we were talking about this idea of you could never take level 3 public services students to a live crash. You just couldn't, for loads of reasons, ethical reasons and practical reasons. And the fact is, logistically, how would you know when there's going to be a crash? All the things that would, but you could recreate those scenarios within an immersive experience like you're talking about. Public services are now having to look at, okay, how do I triage now? Which one's the most important? How do I then make some decisions? How do I, I've got 5 potential patients here. Who do I determine is the most needy? Like, they are real things that a paramedic's going to have to do, or somebody in the police force is going to have to do. But these level 3, 17, 18-year-old learners are not going to be able to have that work experience. Live work experience. And so what we're doing here, and I think it ties into something, I certainly think that there's something there about giving young people those skills experiences, those lived work experiences, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. And that's just to give a few examples of how we've used the technology. So we use the technology quite a bit now with our SEND students, so our students who do have those more special needs, students with anxiety. And obviously as a college, we're preparing those types of students for employment, just like any other student, and being able to put them in spaces that they would be very anxious to enter. So if they're going to do a work experience, for example, to be able to let them experience what it's like in that building, what it's like in that environment within an immersive room before they actually go there, really, really helps. And we've collected feedback that shows that their anxiety levels go down when they then do walk into those places. And that's not just with those students, but with all students in the college, really, that we're able to give them an experience. And that's what industry is using it for a lot at the moment as well, in terms of like the fire service using the police as well. I know the police came in to an event that I put on you that you were last year, Ben, as well. It's at Hartlepool Sixth Form, and they did some VR materials with students where they recreated crime scenes and recreated just scenes where I think it was one where you go into a bar and you've got to look out and find out which people in the bar are probably the most vulnerable and who to watch out for, and just to be able to put people in that situation so that then when they are in that situation in a real life scenario, then they're familiar with it. They're not associated with just getting used to the environment because they've already gotten used to the environment, so they can think clearer. If it's an emergency type scenario, they're able to act faster, be able to be more comfortable with it. So yeah, those types of experiences, and also just I think what you touched on there about the experiential side of learning, I think it's very easy just to say it, like, oh, and like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
or it's very easy just to hear it and go, oh, yeah, well, yeah, experiential types of learning. And I know, as like somebody who used to be a teacher in a secondary school, those types of experiences are becoming more and more rare because it's difficult to get the time to do it, and there's more emphasis put on the knowledge side, knowledge imparting, rather than experiential side of things. But it really does make a massive difference. And just to give you an example, we had some students who were doing GCSE resits at a college, predicted, so the new GCSE scoring system is up to 9 now, and they predicted ones and twos, which is some of the lowest scores. They're not passes, they wouldn't be recognized as passes anywhere. And they were studying The Great Gatsby, the novel, and their teacher created, they were in lesson, she was teaching traditionally, so they were reading excerpts from the book, she was teaching them about the characters. And the students just found it really difficult and got very, very turned off by the characters. They just weren't connecting with them. They couldn't even distinguish between the characters. If she was to ask them, they would do a whole lesson, then she would ask them a question about the different characters, and they would get the characters mixed up. They didn't really know who the characters were. So she created this whole experiential immersive lesson within one of our immersive rooms, where she recreated a 1920s aristocratic party from the movie. And she brought in, I think she brought in her grandma's old fur coat from the 1920s. Students could try it on. She sprayed some, I think she had her grandma's old Chanel perfume that dates from around that time. She sprayed it in there to give the smells. And then they showed clips from the movie with Leonardo DiCaprio, but then also while that was happening around the full 360 immersive wall was different character profiles of the characters. And the students, the next day in lesson, she gave them a GCSE exam question based on the characters in Great Gatsby. And the students on average, remember they were predicted ones or twos, went up to sevens and eights in their score. It just clicked with them after a few minutes in there. It clicked the whole experience of it, they just got it. And I think that fascinates me. And I think part of my job and my team's job at the minute is trying to recreate that, and trying to recreate the power that can have on learning. And not just for an exam, like if you listen to this podcast regularly, you'll know that we're not just about the exam question and the exam, but actually real lessons for life and real experiences that are going to help broaden someone's skills in life. That's what we're working on at the minute. And to be honest, I'm going to be completely honest here, and I hope my boss isn't listening, but when I first started my job, the whole immersive side of things wasn't my priority, my personal priority for my job. There was a lot of other things that I felt needed to happen. And to a certain extent, I kind of thought, well, we need to do some basic technology strategy here before we go on to the big picture, hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of equipment stuff. But we had it. This college had invested in it, and the more and more I learn from the the learning experiences that are happening in there. It just, it blows my mind. And I think this kind of thing is where it's at. It's where ink for engagement, for learning. It's amazing.
So if I'm going to play devil's advocate in this conversation, which doesn't happen very often, usually I'm like, yeah, that sounds well good. And I am. I love it. I love this thing. Because I think if every one of that teacher's lessons were experiential, there's a very, very high chance that it will lose its power, won't it? And actually, there's probably some people who will be listening to this podcast saying, yeah, well, that's all well and good, but imagine how many hours you need to put in to make that happen and blah, 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 blah. I'm probably rightly so. And the outcome of somebody moving from ones and twos to sevens and eights is an outcome, an impact that you think is worth the effort. So I suppose, like I said, playing devil's advocate, there's this idea of how do we get to this point of experiential not becoming the norm in the sense that it loses its power. I suppose it's that balance, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think to a certain extent it is the content. So, I mean, I don't know about you, but I haven't got sick of the television in my living room yet, and that's just a 2D panel on the wall. I get sick of some stuff on it, but the better the content, the more I'm engaged in it. So I suppose to a certain extent, it is the content. I think that another extent, it won't be the flashy new bit of kit that engages all of the time. It can't be. But, and I think that's where good teaching and learning and pedagogy has to take over.
Nice.
And I think it's like anything. You can create a nice experience in a classroom. Like you said, with the recreating of the Hindu festival.
Yeah.
You can do that. But if you did that every lesson, after the second, third time, the students aren't going to be into it. They're not going to be bored. They're going to be bored. So it's how do you, and I suppose that's what we're looking at it in the framework as well, because we recognize that the high end technical interactive experiences, like for example, creating your own virtual environment, which can take months and months and months just for a 15 minute lesson, for example, that's not going to be the way we go with this. Fair enough. We're probably going to do some of that because we want to showcase the true potential of it and push ourselves to the limit. But I think the majority of the experiences are going to be the easy to recreate experiences.
Yeah.
So for example, you can stick a YouTube video into VR mode and have that surround you, and it just like you would stick a YouTube video on in a class, I guess. But just that the fact that it's fully immersive just has that extra impact. But then that engagement can only go so far, and a good teach and learn has to kick in.
Yeah.
It's like any tech, it goes back to the very, it doesn't matter if you're using a Chromebook and Google Classroom or you're using a £750,000 immersive space. If it's technology for the sake of the technology, it's not going to last, is it? It has to support good teaching and learning, where you're going to be making making progress with those students over time.
And that's just fundamentals, isn't it? The technology then, and it's that SAMR model that we're talking about, that idea that technology is supposed to enhance and then transform the learning. It's not, but that the learning has got to still be fundamental about that. You've got to think about what the students need to know, what they don't know already, and then the steps to get there. And the technology is one of the steps potentially that could be used in that way, couldn't it? It's interesting. For those who are listening outside of the UK, this reference might be a bit strange, but we're a big fan in our house of The Repair Shop. I don't know if you watch The Repair Shop, Dan.
I don't, but I've heard of it.
So The Repair Shop is based on this idea that exactly what it says on the tin, people go with a broken, you're thinking, where's he going with this? Go with a broken clock or a broken chair or an old toy that they want restoring, and they give it to these experts who know how to, who are really good at working with old clocks or whatever else it is. And in last night's episode, so this is the end of October, there was a special guest So the special guest in this episode was not just any old special guest. It was King Charles, pre him being king, actually. It was filmed. But he took in a piece. I think it was a clock that he took in that had been broken, and he took it in, and they got some people, they fixed it, and they managed to get it fixed, and it was a great story. But it's very interesting what he said, and he was talking about this idea about it's a huge shame, the idea that vocational education has fallen off the wagon in terms of priority in mainstream education. There is a point to this and where I'm going with it. But this idea, he was basically talking about these people that were specialist skills, that were doing things around like stonemasonry or clock making or little things like that that have kind of fallen away by the wayside. But he was more generally talking about vocational skills in general, like work-based skills that they've kind of taken a back seat for the academic, haven't they? And it's not, we're not here bashing academia. We're academics. I consider myself to be academic. And so we're not bashing that at all. I taught an academic subject in that sense for a long time, but it's this idea that he was talking about the need and the lack of vocational skills that are prevalent. And, I think it ties really nicely into this idea around how the immersive experiences are a really great way to help with vocational experience and vocational learning, to add to the fact of like laying bricks you're still going to need bricks, mortar and a trowel. Like you're never going to get away from that. If you're not going to teach somebody how to lay bricks by watching a video on how to lay bricks, but you can do that within an immersive experience. You can do that within a there must be ways to do that from a construction perspective, and I know that BIM and that idea of modeling and 3D modeling is something that obviously could tie into that message as well, isn't there? So there's this idea of not just public services, it's not just healthcare, there's actually broader conversations about vocations and jobs that are going to need the use of this level of not just virtual reality, but I know you wrote something recently, Dan, didn't you, about the idea about extended reality and the impact that that's going to make on the workplace. So I think it ties back in, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I don't know if any, I've really got into using a Meta Quest recently and use Meta's own Horizon World, which is their version of the metaverse. And you can go into creator mode in there and a developer mode, I think it's called, where you can create your own worlds. And it's fascinating. It takes a bit of time of getting used to it, but you can literally, with your hands, pull apart objects, make them bigger, change the shape of them in real life, move it a bit, walk around the other side of it, pull it out a bit, really manipulate an object.
Like Minority Report, like that Tom Cruise film.
Yeah, but in complete 3D, really, and manipulate 3D objects and create your world by doing that. And I guess and I think we're starting to see like the designing of buildings and architecture being done in that way, where somebody can actually be immersed in the plans, in the modeling of it. I think the implications for this are massive. They really are, and especially if we're seeing a real move towards kind of, I think what it's been dubbed 3D printed buildings, where large 3D printers create the building. Quite fascinating if you look on YouTube at that and how they do that. But I suppose the design has to happen within the software, within the VR world. A bit like, I suppose, how you would with something like CAD, the 3D printer then creates it or creates the parts that are then put together. So yeah, and that's just construction. There's so many different industries that will be using it and are using it. And I know in that blog, which I put out today, which is our essay for this week. So if you subscribe to the newsletter, you'll get it in your inbox on Saturday morning.
Nice plug there, Dan. Nice yeah.
But I did mention there that over it's predicted that over 23 million jobs will be enhanced by extended reality globally by 2023. I mean, that's what, 3 months away? That's an increase from 800,000 in 2019. So we're just seeing that massive, massive change in industry and the uptake of this technology for not just training and getting people ready for the workplace, but for actually working, for doing the work in those immersive realms. And even to the point, if you do use a MetaQuest, there's another app in there called Meta Workrooms, and me and Ben were playing around with this a couple of weeks ago. And they've just released a feature where within your headset, you can sit at a virtual desk and access three massive, large, curved screens, which is your actual computer. So it connects to it via a remote desktop. And you can work within an office anywhere you want in the world and have that kind of peace and quiet within there in a virtual reality where you actually can work on your own computer and work. So it's not just the hands-on vocational side that is having an impact in these virtual worlds, but even just working at a computer, it's transforming how that happens as well. I think the technology is going to get better. I think if anyone listened to there was a great episode of Joe Rogan's podcast a couple of months ago with Mark Zuckerberg and how they're going to be progressing the technology and how they see it going over the next 20 years. And I think he very much said that he expects it to be within the confines of a regular pair of glasses, the technology eventually, and that it'll probably be more common to have augmented reality than virtual reality. So you can see that with the new Meta Pro, they've really enhanced the features for augmented reality within that, where you can see the room you're in, the world around you. But the virtual reality objects are within that
space. I'm literally just looking at how much they are.
Did you see? I noticed that last night because I was buying another Meta Quest for someone on my team. I thought, I'll just check to see how much the Meta Pro is. It's £1,500.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. And that's totally prohibitive for some people. But the reality is every single piece of kit has done the same, has gone through the same journey. So yeah. I think there's a there is something that's moving towards that, and that idea of that mixed, or like you say, augmented reality, that ability to be able to be in the world but also be in another world, that idea of is not just the things of science fiction. And I think that's the bit that is exciting. And I know that there's some people that we'll probably think, oh, look at these idiots talking about VR. Like, people have been talking about VR since the 80s or the 70s, and they're like, this is where it's going to go. And if we're not gamers, then... And I remember our conversation, Dan, when we were talking about that workroom stuff, that I don't want a headset on. I don't want to be out of the world. And I need to be... I want to be able to experience that, but I don't want to be totally immersed in it. And that's that whole, it's a rock and a hard place, I think, sometimes, because getting immersed in that does take you out of this world. But if that's the way that experiential types of learning, not just learning, but working, are going to go, then education needs to make sure it keeps up. And that's not just saying, I'll tell you what we'll do is we'll buy everybody a MetaQuest Pro and we'll put our learning all on that. That's not what we're saying at all. So please don't misread.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm saying. Rather than giving every child free school meals, what we should do is send them all a MetaQuest Pro. And then
but it will. I think it is the age-old thing, isn't it? Of like, don't watch too much TV, you'll go blind. That person's always on their phone. And I know we've talked about how young people, their ability to multifunction while being on a phone is immense now, and people of our age and older, just we don't get it. Like I'm able to have my phone and be flicking through and be semi watching a TV program, but our young people now can fully watch a TV program, be on their phone, be having a conversation with someone sat next to them. Their ability to use this technology is a lot greater. And I think when you're not as native in that as maybe younger generations, and that's quite a generalization there from me, but I think it's generally true. We don't get it, and I think we're becoming now the older men and older people, and thinking, oh, this technology, will it catch on? Oh, I don't know. But actually, and I think it's very similar to what we say about cryptocurrency and blockchain technology. And I always come back to the, I think we mentioned it on the last episode with Adam Roney, and I always come back to kind of the point that this stuff's out of the box now.
Yeah.
You can't, it's not, we're not all going to get together on the planet and go, right, that blockchain technology or that virtual reality technology, it's a bit naff, isn't it? And that it's going to take us away from the real world, and our kids are going to be trapped in it. So let's contact every VR company and say, right, let's not do this anymore. We're better than this. It's just not going to happen. The technology is going to get better. It's going to be like my daughter, Matilda, she's just turned 3, and she has played around within the metaverse and literally picked it up. She knew what she was doing. And when you think, I don't know about you, but when I think, like, I was born in 1986, and when I was like 3 or 4, the technology around at the time, like we had one of those VHS players that had the big top loading thing that came up.
Yeah, Betamax. Big
drawer came up. Yeah,
you put the Betamax. Yeah,
put the VHS in, and the remote control was on a wire for it. So you can only you can only get like halfway across the room with it. And then when you tied it up on an evening, you'd wind the wire around the remote control and then put it back on.
My first TV had buttons on top. You had buttons on top to change the channel.
But when you think like that, that's the technology that was around when I was 3. My daughter, who's 3, is playing with a Meta Quest in the metaverse.
Yeah.
When she's 36, what is the technology is going to be so far advanced, and she will imagine being in a position where you're looking at a Meta Quest 2 and the metaverse as ancient technology. Like, imagine Matilda's on a podcast with your daughter in 33 years time laughing at the metaverse on a Quest 2. Like, in order to get that position, what the hell is the technology going to be like then? It's going to happen.
Yeah, it is, because nobody ever thought, and I know we take this before, nobody thought, we've seen that, you showed that video, didn't you, Dan, about what people first thought, what David Letterman thought about the first time. Bill Gates talked about, was Letterman, weren't it? When they first talked about the internet, this is never going to catch on. It's not going to, why would anybody? I'm not entirely saying that VR is going to be, but if a company like Meta, Facebook have thrown in, and they got in trouble this week. I don't know if you've seen that, Dan, that their board have said, don't throw too much into it because of throwing too, but nearly $15 billion a year. Man.
My light just fell there. You saw me panicking.
$15 billion a year, aren't they, investing?
The Meta stock value has fell through the floor at the minute as well. But it happens. It happened to Amazon. It happened to Google at one point. I would still bet on them. I think they're,
yeah, I think I would as well. And I think they're not just the only people, are they? There's people out there that are putting a lot of time and effort into this. And I think the key bit, and this is the bit that I think we're all on the same page of, is that we're not just talking about, let's get people into a virtual reality so they don't need to consider themselves in an actual reality. So like a physical reality. So we can, if you live in that world, then, and you spend too much time in a virtual world, and you're not, it's the idea of the merging of the two. It's that you use that phrase, didn't you, that's become quite common, that extended reality. So the reality, that the physical reality that we've experienced already and that is tangible now, that we can touch and we can see, is going to be enhanced by this, and the technology that allows that are these headsets, or is this metaverse, is the is the broader conversation and actually that Web3 stuff that we've talked about before in terms of digital experiences.
I think Adam Roney said in the last episode, he said, actually, we've been living in the metaverse for quite a while now. It's just this next iteration of it is more immersive, essentially. And I think it's true. Like when you think, like when I leave the house, my Google Pixel buds go in my ear and I'm connected to the internet through Spotify.
Yeah.
When I'm looking at my phone, probably too much, and like checking Facebook, Twitter, I'm connected to the internet. I'm living probably a large chunk of my life through the internet. Doing this right now, we're living a large part of our of what we do through the. I know we're meeting up tomorrow, which is going to be exciting. We're getting together in Leeds
in real life. Doesn't happen, does it?
Yeah. We do this through the internet. We're living in this is a virtual world. Really, it's not a real world. We're not sat next to each other, even though on the screen it looks like we are. But actually, a 3D generated, created environment with an avatar in it, which is what the metaverse technically is at the moment, I guess, is just the next iteration of that, where it's where someone's essentially put the technology that goes into computer gaming with social media. Essentially, that's what the metaverse is at the moment. And there's lots of other layers that are getting built onto that in terms of if you want to go down the blockchain avenue and digital ownership and that, which is quite exciting. But it's just the next phase of this thing of living a virtual life. It sounds crazy when I talk like that. I always remember a book I read probably about 15 years ago now called The Feed. Fantastic, like really good book by a guy, I think his surname's Anderson, and it's in a bit of a dystopian future where when babies are born, a chip goes into the head, and then they live an augmented life, essentially. So essentially an augmented reality without a headset. So they can listen to music in their head, just like we would through Pixel Buds. They can do a private chat with somebody through the just by thinking, because they're using the chip in their head. They walk past a shop and virtual adverts pop out from the shop at them, and only they can see them, and they're personalized to them as well, just like when you're on the internet and you're on a shop, and then you go an online shop and you go into Facebook and then you get targeted. It's like it's essentially, and this book was written 15 years ago, and it was like a very, very dystopian world. Now, apart from the chip in the head bit, kind of live in that world already now.
Interesting. Maybe this is what Elon Musk's talking about with Neuralink. Maybe read the book and thought that's what we need to build. Do you know what? I think Dan, like that whole idea of iteration is quite interesting in this, in that we think and the people who reject the concept of virtual reality or extended reality reject this version of it, not necessarily what they are experiencing and considering, like that you're saying, that we're already doing that through phones and AirPods or whatever else, but they might not be rejecting the full reality of what it could lead to and why it might be really powerful. Because let's just think about it, like the whole world shut down in 2021 and stayed connected through a virtual reality, through Zoom or through Google Meet or whatever else it was, to be able to still do work, to be able to still connect with each other, be able to still have meetings, to be able to still teach. That whole, and we're not saying we need to do, but, and there was some kickback towards that, wasn't there? And lost learning and all the stuff that happens with it. But let's take it for what it is. We are in that world, but the rejection is probably the headset thing, like I keep talking about. The rejection is that level of there's a lack of parity across people and equitable access to all this kind of stuff, and all them things are genuine things. But what we're saying is the world is shifting, and therefore because the world is shifting, which we can't ignore, it's not one of those things that we can like, let's stop the world, we want to get off. It's moving. We've got to take education with it as well, and none of us necessarily with thought, I certainly didn't think when I first started teaching all those years ago that I'd eventually be ended up doing teaching in the metaverse or even teaching online. That was never even a concept, was it? It just wasn't. It's just madness. So we've got to embrace that there are changes afoot, whether it is virtual reality, but it certainly is extended in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. Just thinking, it's probably like the philosophy student in me. I suppose ever since the first person drew a cave painting, there's almost that need of humanity to escape reality.
Yeah.
Of trying to be somewhere else. And you could even go back to like,
this is deep.
Yeah, but I was just thinking, even with like the invention of the Gutenberg press and the ability to, or even before that, reading or hearing someone read aloud transport you somewhere else. Like,
yep.
Technically a book is a virtual reality because you're connecting virtually with somebody else's thoughts from a different time. Like, and technology has helped to advance that more. And I do wonder, where does it lead? Because when I was listening to you talk there about the next iteration and the iteration in 50 years' time. But, and I suppose like somebody in the 1980s couldn't have imagined where the internet was going to go when that first started. I suppose it's strange thinking that we can't imagine where this technology is going to go in the next 30, 40, 50 years. And yeah, it's difficult to imagine that for me anyway. I think I'm reminded of, I'm sure there's a quote somewhere where, isn't there somebody, I'm sure it's like a quote from like the 1900s where somebody says, oh, that's it now. Nothing else can be invented. We've invented everything that could ever be. And I bet they were sitting here a bit like I am now thinking, well, what else could we invent? We've literally got it all now. Like, literally, what could come next? It's just, you can't fathom it. But we do progress it. And I think it is exciting. And it's a reminder, like you said, that the world will continue turning. The next iteration will come. The next new technology will come. And I think, and it's interesting because some people will say as a response to that argument that, well, maybe in education, we shouldn't jump on the next bandwagon, the next bit of technology that comes along, and just stick to the traditional, what we know. But actually, I think the opposite. I think we do jump on the train. We do and see where it goes, because that train's leading to where our students are going to live and work and play, and they're going to need to know what's coming, because then they're going to be the creators of the next iteration as well. It's tough for educators because things are always changing, but it's the nature of the job, isn't it?
It is. I was doing some training, online training, in that virtual world that we live in last week, and we were talking about like iteration stuff. And one of the things that came up was my first experience of PC gaming. I'm not a big gamer at all, but my first experience of PC gaming, other than Minesweeper and Solitaire on my dad's PC, was Doom. And I don't know if you remember. Do you remember Doom, Dan?
Yeah, I never played it, but I can remember it.
Yeah. And like Duke Nukem and that kind of thing. But Doom was that 2D virtual world where you obviously picked up weapons and...
It was first player, so you were the character.
Yeah, you were the first. Yeah, that was it, yeah. And I think to myself, actually, that was so... Like, you felt... If they'd have measured my heart rate at that point, if they'd had a whoop strap on that was talking, like my stress levels would have been massive in that moment. And there was like, I was in anticipation, there was dopamine stuff, there was serotonin, like there would have been all that kind of chemical element that happened. But if you were to give the kids now, unless they were like, oh, it's retro gaming, because obviously retro makes it better, doesn't it? Like, that's why people love vinyl and retro games and whatever else. But from a graphics perspective, from a world perspective, from a movie, but if you compare that now to Modern Warfare or or Call of Duty or something similar, like it just doesn't even compare. And what we will see in gaming in 10 years' time, 20 years' time, doesn't even compare to what we see now. It's that whole principle for me that what we see now, we think, oh, wow, that's epic. We used to work at a school that had one of the first iterations of a immersive room and had like projection for floor and ceiling and walls. And they were doing that. They did war poetry stuff in there. And they had like the Fields of Flanders moving. That was what they had on the walls as they were doing war poetry. Brilliant. Like you remember that stuff, but that was, we look back now and think, oh, that was great. But it wasn't like rocket science. It wasn't anything that was going to blow people away. So I get excited now because I think my grandchildren and what they'll experience, and even your children, Dan, because my children are, again, a little bit older, so Niamh probably won't see that level of change in education, but maybe Martha will, but yours will, and certainly grandchildren. What will it look like? And some of the stuff which is quite interesting is how the mixed reality will tie into that supplementary schooling stuff that we've talked about before. So obviously we've talked about Kidato and Synthesis and some Sora and some of these other wonderful places that are trying to do out of the norm schooling. Maybe there's an opportunity to develop some of that stuff as well that sits within it. And the iteration will be some of these schools that we're talking about. Actually, maybe even that stuff that Melissa McBride was talking about and in the metaverse stuff might tie into some of this, the school in the metaverse stuff.
Definitely. And I think when we talked to, was it Gavin Smiley from Sora? Garrett Smiley from Sora. I pushed him on the whole agenda of metaverse, and he kind of admitted, I think reluctantly, because I think they're obviously working on this at the moment, is that's where it'll go. That's where online schooling will go. And I know a few places. I know I've got a friend who works at Darlington College, and they've just secured funding to create their own online campus that can be accessed through virtual reality. It's starting to be pushed. It's starting to happen, and it is interesting that kind of, I feel like we are at a bit of a crux. And I met up with a good friend of mine yesterday for a coffee, David Fisher. Big shout out to David. He's actually a TV editor. He edits like Doctor Who and Netflix stuff, and yeah, he's quite famous TV editor. And we were talking about, because he's just had a daughter who's 11 weeks old. It's his first child, and we were talking about kind of, well, about the best route to put our kids on for education. And I was kind of just having a very similar conversation now, really, where I was saying, I think I feel like I'm at a crux where I could just push my children into the traditional, go to second, well, in the UK anyway, go to primary school, secondary school, do A levels, go to university. Or I feel like I'm in a kind of privileged position doing this podcast, because we get to hear about some of the more groundbreaking transformational education that's going on, and the stuff kind of on the horizon that's coming our way, and that could possibly change education. Like, or do I start to look at maybe the more experimental, for want of a better term, types of education going on out there that are pushing the boundaries and try and mix it up for my own children? It's really interesting knowing that we're on that crux, like what path to take for your own family. Yeah.
And we certainly feel that. I know, well, I'm speaking for the three of us, but I'm talking for myself as well. Like there is, we know that we've got privilege in that. And that's a massive acknowledgement in that. But just in the same way that my kids have got a well-stocked set of books, and my kids love reading because it's been intentional about it. I'm being intentional about some of the other stuff as well. So like I'm being intentional about Niamh doing coding, but then I'd also, on the flip side of that, make sure that they still have piano lessons and they do still go swimming and they still do. So I think there's definitely something that sits in there. And I think when we look at this idea of what can this mean for like education on the ground now, I think my my take on it has always been around this. We've got to make memorable learning experiences, and we've got to help children to connect to what we are teaching them by making it meaningful to them. And that's where true learning can happen. Well, the technology can support that, and it's starting where we are. It's not saying everybody needs a £750,000 immersive space, is it, Dan? It's the idea of how do we start doing this, and then actively have a plan to strategize, to think what will this technology of the future look like, that the technology of now, and schools have got to kind of jump on it as we can. And so if you're a head teacher, or you're leading maths or whatever else, and you're listening to this, it's that idea of not just thinking, do we need to give every child a Chromebook? I'm not saying give every kid a VR headset, but it's thinking, where do we go with this extended reality element as well?
Yeah, and I think it's the box three stuff, isn't it? A few episodes ago, when it was just me, you having that chat about innovation, and we mentioned box three, and it was, I think it was episode 190, Strategy for Life. And I suppose it's, of course, we've got to cultivate and carry on with the performance engine, the box one stuff, the stuff that gets results at the moment. But we also need to have a foot in box three. We have to be looking at the weak signals, or what's probably quite strong signals now, that are coming to us of what things are going to be like. And I think VR in the metaverse is quite a strong signal now. It's not just something that we're hearing whispers of, that this could be a big thing. We know it's going to be a big thing. We know it's where a lot of work's going to happen, a lot of life's going to happen. And by that same standard, a lot of learning's going to happen as well. Yeah. So it's, how do we get ready for that, really? And how do we, as educational providers, educational institutions, schools, colleges, universities, how do we ring fence some resources, some staff time, some staff resources to start exploring that, to start building, and to start playing around with it, and to start experimenting, trialing things. And if we get it wrong, we get it wrong. But actually, I don't think you can get it wrong in this realm now. I don't think it's not a weak signal. It's not something that we thought was going to be big, like mini disc players, and then they disappeared. God, imagine the guy or girl who invested in mini disc players. I used to have one. I got one for Christmas. I thought I was the coolest person in the world.
Did you put it in your belt?
Well, do you remember when the Sony ones, the like really cool Sony ones, when they got released, and they had like a little clip,
yep,
so you could clip it onto your like lapel? Oh, I had that. I loved that thing. It was quite a nice. It was a nice bit of kit.
They were nice. I never had one. One of my mates had one, and he loved the mini disc, and he was creative. Used to record things to his mini disc.
Shame it didn't land anywhere. Somebody had an idea to just store it inside and not have a disc. So it's. I think this, the VR technology, the blockchain, the stuff that we go on about, is, it's not a weak signal. It's not something I think that will go. I think it's a new wave of technology that's here to stay. And I suppose if we're really serious about future proofing education and giving the next generations or the next cohort of students the best experience and the best chances for the world that they're going to live and work in, then we have to start exploring it. We have to start investing in it. And that might not necessarily be me with money. I know, especially a lot of schools, especially with the current economic crisis in England, is really tough for schools now, more so than it has been. And that's saying something, because it's been tight for the last 12 years. We have to start looking at it, really. And we can't go back into that shell, can we? We can't go back into that attitude of, well, we don't jump onto the next fad, and we just stick to traditional 19th century schooling because it's what's worked, and we don't have to think outside the box to do that side of teaching, do that side of learning. I think we do have to jump on the next fad.
Yep.
I think there's a responsibility to do that. Obviously, don't bet the house on it, but dedicate a bit of resources to the next fad, because ultimately, if if it does turn out to be the next big thing, it's the students that are going to win. It's the students' lives that are going to be advanced and their prospects advanced. So don't be afraid to jump on that bandwagon. I think we do that. Some of the stuff we talk about fizzles out. Some of it is literally transforming the world, and you've got to take your chances, and especially in education, we've got to create those chances and opportunities, haven't we?
Absolutely. I think that's a nice place to wrap it, Dan. I think it's always a good conversation when we go off piece and talk about multiple different things, but then bring it back to that idea of the future of education requires us to take risks and to look at things differently. Not, like you said, not bet the house on it, but then move to that point. So if you like this, obviously we've got a back catalogue of well over 190 episodes now, and we've got blogs that are going out. Check out edufuturist.com if you want to sign up to our newsletter that goes out on a weekly basis on a Saturday, going to your inbox. We're really committed to pushing the boundaries and pushing the envelope on the future education. We've got some really, really exciting guests coming up for you over the next few weeks and months. We've all been busy booking guests. Well, I say we all have been busy, but two of us have been busy. No, joking, Steve. We love you, mate. We know you've not got, you definitely, if you've listened to this episode, you haven't got to this point anyway, if Steve's listening. Steve's been in Ireland today, so hasn't been able to join us. But yeah, we've really been busy looking at new guests. We've got some exciting ones coming up, and exciting ones come up on episode 200 as well, so of the Edge of Futures podcast. So go over to edgeoffutures.com, get on to subscribe on YouTube, or and let us know on Twitter as well.
We're meeting together in person tomorrow. Like, I'm sure you know that I'm up in the northeast of England, Ben's over in the northwest, Steve's in Yorkshire, and we're going to be meeting tomorrow, and we're actually getting together to talk about Edufuturist, look at new ways of giving back to the community who are part of Edufuturist and listen and are part of what we do. So it's going to be quite exciting. Be good to meet in person.
It will be good to meet in person, and actually maybe even announce next week what we were doing and where we were meeting as well, because that might be quite exciting.
Dan's
like, where are we meeting? I don't actually know.
I still don't even know.
A special venue, aren't we?
I was just thinking, where am I even going to park? Are you just going to park in that multi-story that we parked in last time?
No. There's a car parking space near that space. Anyway, finish the episode and then talking about parking spaces. Yeah, we did really well then. We were talking about real things and talking about forwards on this and that and the other. But yeah, it'll be good. Exciting. Thanks for listening. And do give us some feedback. Let us know, info@edufuturist.com, if you want to drop us an email about it, or just connect with us on the socials at edufuturist, and let us know what you think about this episode. Nice. Thanks for listening, everybody.
I'm off to watch the new episode of House of Dragons.
Enjoy.
Excited.